So good evening everyone, and welcome to Vajrapani, and welcome to this 10-day Copan West Lam Rim Retreat. My name's Glenn Svensson, and together with Venerable Dolma here, we'll be leading this 10-day retreat. I'll be leading the classroom sessions and the early morning meditation, and Venerable Dolma will be leading the afternoon and evening meditation sessions. Maybe we can begin with a few introductions. I'll just introduce myself first. So as you can probably tell from my accent, I'm from Australia. I grew up there, went to university there. I have Bachelor of Science in IT, so that was my former profession. I was in the IT industry for about 12 years. Did my first course in Buddhism in 95 in Tushita Meditation Center in Dharamsala in India. And then I went on to do 2 one-month courses, the famous November course at Kopan Monastery in Kathmandu. And then I went on to do a 7-year study program in Buddhist philosophy in Italy. And I finished that in 2004. Then I went on to do some retreat for some time. And for about the last 8 years or so, I've been teaching, mainly based at Tushita Meditation Center in Dharamsala in India, but also teaching in Australia and Europe. This is my first visit to the US. So I'm very happy to be here and very happy to lead this retreat and the next one after this as well. So that's a little bit about me. That's probably enough, I think. So maybe we get Venerable Dolma here to give an introduction to herself.
Buddhist studies from there. I just graduated about 3 years ago before I came to Vajrapani. I think that's it. I'm excited to be here. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. What I'll get you to do then is introduce yourself. So very briefly, just your name, where you're from, maybe a little bit if you have any experience with Buddhism in general. And if you have any experience in particular with the Lam Rim, which is, of course, the structure we're going to follow in this retreat. And then also maybe if you have any particular thing that you would like to get out of these 10 days. So if you can mention a few of these things, it'll help me to with my presentation. So we'll... Maybe just to run through briefly the schedule, I think, did you all get a copy of it? Is that right? Yeah, okay. I'm not sure if Heidi mentioned the slight change. She did. Okay, very good. Okay. So tomorrow, then for the next 8 days, we're going to have the same schedule. So in the morning, there'll be a meditation from 7:15 till 8. I'll be leading that, and that's going to be, as is mentioned here, this what's called shamatha meditation. So it's basically just to develop a calm, clear, focused mind. So it's like sort of very resting meditation in the morning. Breakfast, 8 o'clock. Then the first morning session, teaching session with me, will be from 9 till 10:15. Then we'll have a morning tea break for about half hour. And then 10:45 till 12 will be the second morning teaching session. Lunch at 12 o'clock. Then each day from 2 to 3, we'll be breaking up into discussion groups, small groups, discussing the material that we've covered in the previous day or so. And I'll talk more about how that's going to work. I'll talk about tomorrow morning. So that's from 2 till 3, and then we'll have afternoon tea break at 3 o'clock, and then there'll be an afternoon teaching session from 3:30 till 5. Then there'll be a short 15-minute break, and then there'll be a meditation 5:15 until 6, so Venerable Dolma will be leading this, and she'll also be then dinner at 6, and then she'll also be leading the evening meditation from 7:30 to 8:30. With the meditation sessions, they're going to be sort of split in two, so we'll have a little 2 or 3 minute break in the middle, so we won't sit the whole period. So you'll have a, for those of you who are a little bit new, you can stretch your legs a little bit in the middle. So we'll be breaking them into two, and often there'll be two slightly different meditations in the first half and the second half, but they'll all be guided, so don't worry. So that's the same schedule we have for 8 days. And then on the last morning, will be a couple of sessions to particularly give some meditation advice about meditation practice, and then also more some daily life advice as well. And then how to go forward with this, what we've done in these 10 days as well. So a lot of advice there in the last morning. But I'll talk more about that later in the retreat. So that's a little bit about the schedule, which I think is fairly straightforward. Any questions about the schedule? Anything that's not clear? Okay. I don't want to keep you very long this evening, because maybe some of you have travelled quite a way to get here today. But what I'd like to do is just give a little brief introduction into the retreat, and then also speak a little bit about how to approach this 10 days, and also speak a little bit about meditation, a brief introduction. So you've all got the materials there, so maybe we can briefly look at the material first to have an idea of what we're going to be doing. So again, this is a Lam Rim retreat, and we're going to be using this here as the basis of our discussions. It's just some outlines and quotes that have been extracted out from a text called here The Great Treatise on the Stages of the Path to Enlightenment, or in Tibetan is called Lam Rim Chenmo, by Lama Tsongkhapa, who is the founder of the Geluk school of Tibetan Buddhism. We're not going to be going through this whole thing in detail, because this is a very extensive text. But what we will be doing is I'll be getting some main points out of this, and there'll be some information there you can use. But it's there so that then in future, if you want to go in more detail, then there's more information. So we're not going to go through every little part of this. This is a huge endeavor. But again, we're just going to use this structure. And the structure of this text is sort of summarized in this two-sided handout here. So this is really the sort of the structure of the next 8 days that we're going to follow. So we're going to be referring to this so that we can see where we are in the overall picture of things. So we're using that quite a lot, and then we're going into here into a few bits of information that we'll be getting out of that. And then you have a number of other handouts, and anyone who's done a course with me knows I like this sort of stuff, all this charts and handouts. So I think we'll be using each of those from time to time through the course, so keep them handy. And then there's also in the front there, there's two other pieces of paper. There's one here with a dedication prayer that I think you'll be using with Venerable Dolma each evening. And then also there's this Vajrasattva practice, which a little bit later in the retreat you'll be doing again with Venerable Dolma, and she'll explain all about that later. So that's basically the material for the course. What I'll be doing also at the end of each day, if anyone's very keen, is I'll be saying what sort of pages of this we'll be covering the following day. So if anyone wants to really sort of prepare a little bit and read a little bit before the class, then you'll know what to read for the following day. Tomorrow, we are not going to start this yet. Tomorrow is going to be a little bit of a sort of a background day. So I'm just going to ease in with some sort of general principles and to sort of lay the framework for this text that we're going to follow. And also I'm going to talk a little bit about the mind tomorrow afternoon, because the mind is something very central to all of this. And I think it's something that's important to know a little bit about, because it's the mind we're trying to work with. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that as well tomorrow. So tomorrow, again, is just an ease-in day, sort of get the frameworks. And then the next day we'll start with the text and go through that, the structure, over the next 7 days then. But again, we're not going to go through all the information in here because it's way too much. But anyone who's really keen to read a bit more, then it's there for you. And then also for future reference, you can use that. Okay? Just a little bit on how to approach these coming days. The first piece of advice is to have a very relaxed approach, because there's going to be probably a number of new concepts that will be introduced, and some of them are not so easy to understand, particularly when we start to talk a little bit about the nature of reality. So if you come into this retreat having this expectation that you'll be able to understand everything very well and easy and have a very clear understanding, then you're probably setting yourself up for a lot of unnecessary frustration. So my advice would be to listen and try and reflect and understand as much as you can. What you understand now, great. What you don't understand, then next time you attend a retreat or read about it, you'll understand a little bit more. So some of these topics are things that you will need to listen to, read about, think about, meditate on many, many times to really gain a clear understanding. So if we have this approach, then we'll be happy with whatever we pick up, and what we don't understand, then next time we'll understand a little bit more. Also, we often talk about developing the three wisdoms. The first wisdom we try to develop is what's called the wisdom from listening or hearing. And that's, of course, when we listen to or hear some instructions. And often here in the texts, when it talks about how to listen to teachings, often they come up with this analogy talking about the three faults of the vessel. And the analogy is that, of course, if we have a vessel like a cup or a pot, but it's upside down, then we can't put any water in it. So that part of the analogy, of course, is that when we're attending a teaching, nothing goes inside. So to help to overcome that difficulty, then we're going to try and keep the sessions as short as possible. And also, I like to be very interactive in my classes, so a lot of great Q&A and discussion in the classes. But also, of course, I like to be very visual, because I think it can help. So that's why we have a lot of material handouts, and I'll be using this board a lot as well. So that's going to hopefully enable some of the material to sink in a little bit better. So that's the first fault, the fault of the upside down vessel. Then they talk about the vessel or the cup that is the right way up, but it's got dirt inside of it. And so if we put water in, it gets contaminated. So here the analogy is that two things really. One is that we listen, but then we misunderstand what's being said. So again, to help avoid that, I very much encourage questions. So if you're listening and you're not sure understanding what I'm saying, then please ask questions. With asking questions, two things. One, of course, is don't just ask the question. Raise your hand first, because often what I'll do is, if I'm in the middle of some idea, I'll wait till I finish. So I'll acknowledge that you want to ask a question, but I'll continue on and finish the point that I'm making, and then I'll get you to ask the question. Also, with asking questions, please keep to the topic, because there are, of course, many interesting questions in Buddhism. And often I'll answer, if you're not keeping to the point, often the response will be, that's coming, that's coming, that's coming, later, later, later. So try and keep to the point, otherwise we get very much sidetracked. So that's how we can avoid misunderstanding, by asking lots of questions, clarifying our understanding. Also, the dirty pot sometimes is talking about not having a very good motivation for listening. So each morning we're going to try and set a good motivation for the day, and then try and bring that into the meditation and the classes as well. Then the third part of the analogy of the pot or the vessel is, you have a pot, but it's got holes in it. So you put water in and it all chains out. So, of course, here we're talking about forgetting what we hear. And actually, modern studies have shown that if we don't reflect on or review the things we hear within 24 hours, we forget 75% of everything we hear. 75%. So we're going to try to avoid that by two methods. One is, you're going to be discussing the material the same day in discussion groups, so that hopefully will allow things to sink down a bit more. And what I want to do each morning is to begin with a short review of what we talked about in the last 24 hours. So those two things, hopefully, so we won't sort of lose 75% of everything we hear. So that is a little bit about listening. The second type of wisdom we're trying to develop is the wisdom from contemplation. Of course, contemplation is when we think about the things we hear. So what this is really saying is that we should not really blindly accept anything we hear. And we can even follow the advice of the Buddha himself, who said, please don't accept what I tell you merely out of devotion to me, but rather you need to be like a goldsmith who checks and tests the quality of the gold before accepting it. So likewise, same advice here. Just because I say something and I say that's what the Lam Rim says, please don't just accept it on face value. You need to think about it, contemplate it, and see whether it makes sense to you. Otherwise, it's not really going to be very helpful for you. So I really encourage you to reflect and contemplate on the points that I'll be presenting over the next 8 days. So with these two wisdoms, of course, we can gain an intellectual understanding of a topic. And, you know, this is generally the two types of wisdoms that we develop in our school years, you know. At school or university, we go to lectures, we listen, and then we think about what's being said. Particularly, of course, if we have to pass some sort of exam, then we really need to do this to have some understanding of the material. But, of course, within Buddhism, the goal is not merely gaining some intellectual understanding of Buddhist concepts, because that in itself is not really going to help us very much, because it's not our intellectual understanding that is determining our behavior. What's determining our behavior, of course, is our instinctive habits. And so often our instinctive habits are not very productive, even though intellectually we understand this is not what we should be doing, we should be doing something else. So if we really want to transform our life, if we want to improve, then we need to transform the mind. And so transforming the mind, we need meditation. We need to bring these intellectual ideas that we're developing and contemplating, we need to bring them into our own experience so that experientially we can have this new perspective and not just intellectually. So if we really want to see a improvement in our life, a transformation of our mind, then we need to internalize the things that we think about and contemplate and reflect on. We need to bring them into our own experience. And so one of the best ways to do that, of course, is through meditation, where we come to experience these things, to relate to these things experientially. So therefore, in this 10-day retreat, of course, we're going to be putting some emphasis on that. So in the afternoon and the evening sessions with Venerable Drolma, you'll be doing a lot of this analytical meditation of trying to internalize a lot of the points that we cover in class. In the morning, early morning meditation before breakfast, we'll be doing a lot of this sort of developing a very calm, clear, focused mind, and also opening the heart as well. And then also in the beginning of the morning session, I'm going to begin with also this sort of shamatha style meditation, developing a very calm, clear, focused mind as well. So we'll be putting quite a lot of emphasis on this. So this is the three wisdoms that we are really trying to develop within Buddhism. Any questions about any of those three? Okay, what I'd like to briefly do now before we finish up this evening is talk a little bit about meditation, a brief introduction into meditation. So what is meditation? The word meditation here comes from a Sanskrit word, bhavana. And bhavana literally means to familiarize, to cultivate, to bring forth. So in meditation, what are we doing? Is we are trying to cultivate and familiarize ourselves with positive qualities and insight. And so effectively what we're trying to do is, of course, transform our mind. Now, within meditation, of course, there are many, many different types of meditations, many. And there are many different ways of categorizing meditation or grouping meditation. But one way which we can group all meditations is into two. The first type is what's called stabilizing meditation. And as the name suggests, we're trying to stabilize our mind. We're, in this type of meditation, we're simply trying to develop a stable, clear, focused mind. So within Buddhism, this is often then what's called concentration meditation, developing concentration. And often this practice is referred to, you'll hear it referred to as shamatha practice. Shamatha is a Sanskrit word. This is often translated into English as calm abiding. So shamatha is a particular level of concentration we're trying to develop, sometimes referred to as single-pointed concentration. So here in this practice, we're just simply trying to stabilize the mind, trying to overcome distraction and dullness, developing a calm, clear, focused mind. Because this is really, I mean, in itself has a lot of benefit. I mean, who wouldn't want to have a very calm, clear, focused mind? But, of course, this is the basis of all other meditations. Because no matter what sort of meditation we're doing on loving kindness or compassion or some sort of Vipassana practice or impermanence, if we can't focus our mind, if our mind is always distracted or very dull, then we're not very effective. We won't be very effective in any sort of meditation. So this is really the basis of all other meditations as well. That if we can really stabilize the mind, develop a very calm, clear, focused mind, then when we go into all the other types of meditations, trying to cultivate compassion and loving kindness and insight into the nature of reality, we're going to be able to better do that. They're going to have much more effect. We're going to be able to penetrate the nature of reality much easier. So this is what we're going to be focusing on in the morning sessions. Then we can... talk about the second type of meditation, which is called analytical meditation. Analytical meditation, as the name suggests, is that we are trying to analyze or investigate a particular concept or topic. And of course, here, this style of meditation can be very vast. We can approach this in many different ways. And there are many different types of analytical meditations that we can do, and we'll be sampling a number of different ones in this retreat with Venerable Drolma in the afternoon and the evening sessions. But often in the spiritual path, we talk about two main aspects that we're trying to cultivate. Which is wisdom and compassion. And so we're going to see this in the Lam Rim text later, that really these are the sort of the two core elements or two aspects of the practice, the wisdom practice, or often in Sanskrit called Vipassana practice, trying to gain insight into nature of reality, and the compassion wing of practice, where we're trying to develop that loving kindness and compassion, the good heart. So, you know, we can often talk about developing our head and our heart together. So a number of the analytical meditations will be sort of focusing on these two main areas. But of course, there are other areas of analytical meditation as well. What I'd like to do briefly now is talk a little bit about this practice, because this is what we're going to be focusing on in the morning sessions before breakfast. And this is something that I want to briefly mention it now, because we're going to be working on that in the morning sessions before breakfast, but in the Lam Rim text it comes quite late, so we won't be sort of covering it in the text until sort of about, I think, day seven, I think, of the retreat. So just to give us a little bit of background for the practice that we'll be doing in the morning. So here, of course, in this stabilizing meditation, one thing I forgot to mention back here is I mentioned that this stabilizing meditation is the basis for all these other analytical meditations. But in two ways, really. One is that if we don't have, as I mentioned, a very stable, clear, focused mind, and then we try to engage in these meditations, then they don't really have much impact because we get distracted or we're spaced out. But also, in these analytical meditations, again, what we are doing is we are investigating something, and often we're following a particular line of reasoning or a particular approach, and then at the end of that, we are coming to a conclusion. Either we're coming to some insight into something, or through going through this line of reasoning, we're coming to have some feeling of compassion, for example. So in both of those cases, when we've gone through that analytical process and we've come to the conclusion, then what we are to do is to hold that, is to hold that compassionate attitude that we've cultivated, or hold that insight that we've come to, that insight that we've just now developed. And so that's why also this stabilizing shamatha practice is important, because if we go through this practice and we come up and we have a little bit of a compassionate mind coming up, but if we can't hold that, it doesn't penetrate. We sort of lose it. You know, for a few minutes we had a very nice, loving, kind, compassionate attitude, and then it's gone. Whereas if we can develop that and then we can hold that with a very stable mind, it really does penetrate much deeper and it has a much more lasting impact on us. So that's, I think, you'll find with Venerable Drolma's meditations that you'll be going through some investigation, and then towards the end, then you'll be just holding that, either that experience of compassion or loving kindness, or if it's a wisdom practice, then holding that insight that we've developed. So that's another point here, why this is so important. Okay. So now, with this stabilizing meditation, again, often it's called shamatha practice. Again, shamatha is a Sanskrit word, often translated as calm abiding in English. So it's a particular level of concentration we're trying to develop in the spiritual path. And within this practice, which again later in the Lam Rim text we're going to look at in quite some detail, it talks about certain qualities that we're trying to develop in this practice. And so, effectively, there are two qualities we're really trying to develop. We're trying to develop not only a stable mind, so stability, so what I mean by stable mind means to be able to focus on a given object without becoming distracted. So the fault here that we're trying to overcome is a distracted mind, distraction. So we're not only trying to have a stable mind to be able to focus on a given object without becoming distracted, but also we're trying to develop a mind that can focus on that object clearly. So we need clarity with that stability. So we need a very clear mind, clear focus. So of course, what's stopping clarity now is dullness, our mind being very dull. So as we're going to see in the Lam Rim text later, it says we need to develop these two qualities of stability and clarity. But I generally like to add a third quality that's not often mentioned in the text, which I feel is extremely important to highlight in our modern day society. And that is relaxation. Because many of us come into this practice from very hectic, stressful background. Our minds are completely agitated. completely tense. And because our minds are so chaotic, generally when we want to focus on something, we apply a lot of tension because we know our minds are so chaotic. If I don't have some tension in my focus, I'm just going to get distracted. So that's what we do at work, at home, whatever we do. If we focus, we tend to be quite tense. And that if we only have to focus for a short time, that can sort of work. But we know from our own experience, if we have to focus on something using that tension for longer time, we often get completely exhausted. And then often get very agitated as well. So this is not the approach we want here. So of course the fault here is tension. And I think the reason that this is not really mentioned so much in the texts is because when these texts were written in ancient India or ancient Tibet, I think people were pretty chill, pretty relaxed. In fact, they were often too relaxed. And so often you'll see in this text, in this meditation text, one of the very first instructions will be firmly focus on the object. And of course, we come into meditation, we see that, we go, okay, I can do that, and we clamp down. We clamp down. And then, of course, we get distracted and we clamp down harder. And then, of course, people start complaining, oh, I don't want to meditate. I just get headaches and I get a stiff neck and it's a disaster. And it just exhausts me, meditation. This is not what we want to do. In fact, I would suggest as a beginner, most of the problems that we experience in meditation is because of this. We're too tight, we're too tense, we're trying too hard. We need to relax, 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 relax. So this is something that I'm going to be emphasizing a lot in the morning sessions, particularly the first few mornings. Relax, relax, relax. Relax body, relax mind. So we need a new way of concentrating, of focusing, with relaxation, not with tension. Because if we do this, we're going to have all sorts of problems in meditation. It won't work. So we really need to learn to relax. So if all you manage to do in that morning meditation over 10 days is you learn to do a little bit of this, good work. Success. So that's why I really like to emphasize this, because what I see is that many people, and it's a symptom of our modern day society, we're so hectic and stressed and tight that we come into meditation with this. And then people have all sorts of problems in meditation. And the more they try, the worse it gets. Because they apply more, because they believe that the problem is they need to focus more. Because that's the problem. They're getting distracted, so more tension is needed. This is not going to work. I know from experience and talking to many people. So we need to have relaxation. On the basis of relaxation, then we can really develop some stability of mind. And on the basis of stability, we can develop clarity. So we really need to be working on them in this order. So this is something I think quite important. The one other thing I'd like to mention this evening before we finish up is what objects are we going to use in this practice? As we're going to see later in the Lam Rim text, we have a very long list of objects that we can focus on in this shamatha practice. And often within the Lam Rim, they will emphasize the object of focusing on a mental image of a Buddha. And there are a lot of advantages to that. Particularly at the highest level of practice in Tantra Vajrayana, we do a lot of visualizing of deities and Buddhas. So if we've already become familiar with that here, then it becomes easy. But I think the reality is for many of us, and those of you who have tried using a mental image of as a Buddha as an object of focus here, it's not easy. It's quite complex, and many of us are not familiar with what a Buddha really looks like. And I think many of us have difficulty visualizing in general. So many people who use that as a beginner find it extremely difficult. But One object that is very much recommended and also in the Lam Rim is the breath. Because as we're going to see in here in the Lam Rim, it says, those of you who have a highly discursive mind, always thinking, 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 definitely the best object for you is the breath. So this, I think, accounts for about 95% of the modern day population. We're all in the head, thinking, thinking, conceptualizing. We are really the slaves of our mind. So therefore, the breath is going to be very helpful because the breath, the sensations of the breath, is physical. So by focusing on them, it gets us out of our conceptual mind and into the physical world, into the body. So that's a good start. And most of our conceptual thinking is about the past and the future. We very rarely are in the present moment, rarely. And it's our living in the past and expecting the future that actually is a source of much of our suffering. So if we focus on the sensations of the breath, they only happen in the present moment. So it gets us out of the past and the future into the present moment. So I think for many of us, the breath is probably going to be the best object, at least in the initial phases of this practice. And also, of course, it's something physical and tangible, a little bit easier to focus on than a mental image for many of us. Also within the breath practice, there are at least three variations that are very helpful. There's what's called the full body approach, and that is to simply notice sensations of the breath anywhere we notice them in the body. So any sensations in the body associated with the breath, to notice it anywhere. And so this is a very diffuse object, and this is very good for working with relaxation. Particularly this is good using the Shavasana, corpse posture, lying flat on your back, hands to the side. So then you can be very relaxed in the body and then just notice sensations of the breath anywhere throughout the body. So if we have a lot of problems with tightness and tension, particularly in the body as well, we can, instead of using the sitting up posture, we can lie flat down in the Shavasana, the corpse posture, noticing sensations in the breath, relax, 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 relax. Also relaxing the mind. So this is very good for working with relaxation. Then another variation which is emphasized in many Buddhist traditions, particularly a number of Theravada traditions, is to focus in the area of the abdomen, the rising and lowering of the abdomen as we breathe. Again, this is a fairly large area, quite easy to focus on. So this is very good for helping to stabilize the mind, to develop stability. And then we have the third variation of focusing at the entrance of the nostrils here, emphasized in many Buddhist traditions. Of course, this is a much smaller area of focus, and because it's a much smaller, subtler object, it's very helpful for improving clarity of focus. So these three variations can be very helpful for developing these three qualities. So I think for many of us, the breath is probably going to be the best object to use, at least in the initial phases. But in this Lam Rim retreat, I want to introduce two other objects which I feel personally bring a lot of benefit for us in our modern society. The second object, and that's, so in the first, I think, 4 or 5 days of this retreat, we're going to be in the morning session working with the breath. We're going to be moving slowly from the full body to the abdomen to the nostrils over those days. and learning the practice and practicing them. Then about halfway through, I think day five, day six, we're going to start to work with the mind. And so here, the object, of course, is the mind, our own mind, and then any mental events arising in the mind, thoughts, emotions, mental images, memories. So in this practice, we are simply observing our own mind. We're developing the ability to be the observer or witness of our mind, observing thoughts and emotions arising and passing, arising and passing. Of course, that's not really what we do now. In fact, now we are really the slaves of our mind. When a thought or emotion arises in our mind, we latch onto it, we follow it, we get caught up in our stories, and we often get overwhelmed by our thoughts, emotions, and memories. And then often also what happens, of course, is if something unpleasant comes up in our mind, we don't know often how to deal with it, so what do? Stuff it back down, suppress it. And of course, suppressing it doesn't deal with it. Often what happens because of suppressing it, it manifests as physical illness. In fact, I think a large percentage of our modern day physical illness is through suppressed mental content. And then often we can feel it in the body. And so what we do is we often disown it. We project it onto the people around us. You know, for example, if we have an issue with anger and we're suppressing our anger and we're not really acknowledging that we have a lot of anger, we can definitely feel it, but we've disowned it. Yes, there's a lot of anger, but it's not me, it's them. They're the angry ones, not me. So we project a lot of this negativity onto the people around us. So both identifying and following these thoughts and emotions or trying to suppress, disaster. We are really slaves of our mind. With this practice, we're going to become the masters of our mind. So, you know, often we're tormented by these mental events. And often what do? We fight with them, don't we? We either try and suppress them or push them away. But fighting with these things is like throwing petrol on the fire. It's just going to be worse. We don't need to fight with these things. In fact, they can only have power over us if we give them power. Because actually, if we look at what is a thought and emotion, it's virtually nothing. It has no power in itself. It only has power if we give it power. And we give it power either by identifying with it or trying to suppress it. If we simply observe it, if we observe a thought, emotion, or memory as it arises and passes, it can't do anything to harm us. Nothing. And of course, every time we identify with it or try and suppress it, we're throwing petrol on the fire. We are making it worse. So, to overcome all of this stuff in our mind, we don't need to fight with it. All we need to do is not feed it, starve it. Meaning we don't have to try and make it go away, because if you try and make it go away, it's going to get worse. All you need to do is don't feed it, is simply be this witness and go, oh, look, there's another thought and emotion coming up and pass. And if we can simply be there and watch it, it can't harm us. And every time we do that, we're not feeding it, which means the habit of that mental garbage coming up will get weaker and weaker and weaker. Our mind will naturally become quiet and still. And then also, so from this, we're going to develop a stable, clear mind. But also what we're going to do is we're going to have the ability to observe, which means if in the future, if some strong mental event were to arise, we could simply be present with it without it overwhelming us. So we will really become the masters of our mind. So I think many of us in our modern society are very much the slaves of our mind. And so that's why we're going to spend some days working with this practice, because I think there has extreme benefit. Then, towards the end, for one or two days, we're going to dabble on the third one. Which is no object. Or sometimes it's called awareness of awareness. In this third practice, we are not particularly focusing on anything. We are simply resting in awareness itself. So in the second practice, it's a very dualistic sense to the practice. There's a sense of being the observer or witness, observing the mind. Whereas in the third practice, it's a much more non-dualistic experience, meaning we are simply resting in the mind itself. We're resting in awareness itself. And in this third practice, we're not interested in any appearances. We're not interested in thoughts and emotions and memories. Of course, we're not trying to block them, but we're not focusing on them. We're simply resting in awareness itself. And this also, I think, in our modern society can give enormous benefit, because that awareness is very open and spacious. And so if we can rest in it, our mind really, we have this sense of this limitless, spacious mind. And then we're not contracting around all these appearances all the time and making our mind very small. So we can really have this open, spacious sense, which means that in daily life, we can really remain in that very quiet, still space, no matter what's going on around us. So without contracting on appearances. Of course, we're not cutting from appearances, but we're not identifying with the appearances. So this third practice, I think, also has enormous benefit in our modern world. And actually, this is really the practice that I personally emphasize a lot in my practice now. And I find this enormously beneficial. Enormously beneficial. So we are going to touch on this in the last probably 2 days of this 10-day retreat. So this is a little bit the objects that we're going to be focusing on in the morning sessions. And then I think we've run out of time. So any questions about any of this before we close up? Yeah.
So when you're working, obviously your mind will be also working, right? So how do you decouple both of them?
I didn't catch something about the breath, and then I missed
the
bit.
When you're working as breath as an object,
right?
And your mind is also working, right? I mean, you are thinking something.
Right, so that's a distraction.
Right, so how do you decouple both of them? How do you say that?
Yeah. One of the things we're going to see in the Lam Rim in this section much later is it says there, if you keep swapping what you're focusing on, this is not going to be helpful.
But it happens naturally.
No, so what we need to do is to pick an object that we want to focus on. And let's say we're focusing on the breath. And I think for many of us, this is going to be where we'll start. So if we're focusing on the breath, then as you said, we're focusing on the breath either here or here, and then a thought comes up. So as we're going to see later in the instructions, what do we do when a thought comes up? Is that when a thought comes up, the thought here is a problem. It's a distraction. So if we notice the thought coming up, we have to let it go and come back to the breath. Let it go and come back to the breath. So every time some thought or memory or something comes up here, we need to let it go. It's a problem. Let it go, come back. Let it go, come back. In this practice, thoughts are not problems. Memories are not problems. Emotions are not problems. So here, we have to let go of thoughts. Here, let them be. Meaning, if a thought comes up, let it be. Means watch it. Arise and pass, arise and pass. Because that's actually part of the object here. So that's the difference here, is here thoughts are problems, we need to let them go. Here thoughts are not problems. What's the problem is grasping the thought and following it. So here we need to let thoughts be and just observe them as they arise and pass. So that's a difference here of what to do with thoughts.
When you say let it go, does it mean that you...
It means just come back to the breath, effectively.
You have to suppress the thought.
No, do not suppress the thought because it's going to be a mess. When it says let it go, it simply means notice that you've become distracted and just come back to the breath. It doesn't mean, oh, thought, go away. I'm trying to focus on the breath. You do that, That's petrol on the fire. That's not going to work. You're just going to become agitated. There's going to be more thoughts, and it's going to be disaster. So all we do is we say, oops, thought, okay, I need to go back to the breath. That's it. And thoughts will continue to arise. So every time it does and we get pulled away, come back to the breath, come back to the breath. Notice it and come back. But again, we're going to get lots of instruction on that in the coming days. Okay. Anything else before we finish up this evening? Okay, then just one more piece of advice about meditation and then we'll finish. And as I mentioned at the start, with the meditation sessions, first piece of advice, relax. Relax, relax, relax. Particularly important here is in these meditation sessions, in these 10-day retreat, we're simply learning the practice. If you're going into these meditation practices hoping or expecting to have some sort of experience, you're just setting yourself up for a lot of unnecessary frustration. So in any practice at the beginning, if you notice there's some expectation or the opposite, some worry or about not being able to do it, both of those you need to drop like a hot potato, because any sort of expectation or worry will derail your whole practice. So at the beginning of the session, if you are having some hope or fear, some expectation from the meditation, positive or negative, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it. Otherwise, it's really, this is one of the big killers of meditation. With the tension is expectation. Just let it go, let it go, let it go, let it go. I know from personal experience. And it gets worse because, you know, at the beginning, people don't know what to expect. So often, really beginners don't have this problem. But then they start to meditate. And then they start to have a few little experiences and they go, ooh, that was nice. Oh, yes, next time I'd like that. Or actually, I think I'll have that again next time. And so then they go into the meditation next time and they go, it's not coming up. Why isn't it coming up? And then we just get frustrated. So we really need to get out of that, because then we're just trapped in the whole hope-fear cycle, hoping for some pleasant thing, worrying about some unpleasant thing. So just drop all of that. And in fact, a good meditation, you know, I'm going on a bit here, but I think this is important. You know, often we hear people who meditate a bit, they talk amongst themselves, they go, you know, you hear one person say, oh, I had a really good meditation today. My mind was really still. And then another time they say, oh, my meditation today was awful. My mind was all over the place. If this is our idea of good and bad meditation, we're stuck, really stuck in hope and fear and expectation. So from one day to the next, we don't know what our mind is going to do. Some days it's naturally more quiet. Other days it's more active. A good meditation is simply any meditation where we try to follow the instructions to the best of our ability, no matter what happens. That's a good meditation. A bad meditation is where we sit down and we don't try to follow the instructions. We just let the mind do whatever it wants. This is good and bad meditation. Otherwise, if we have this idea, we have to have this still mind or whatever, or that if our mind is active, that's a big disaster. We're caught in expectation, hope, fear. Our practice won't go anywhere. So I think this is something very important, and really let go of all of this sort of stuff, and then it'll go a lot better.
Sometimes when I meditate, the problems that I experienced before that I didn't know how to resolve it, and solution comes to my mind when I was meditating, and then I would follow that and keep thinking, then what should I do with this and that? Is that okay or is it not?
Yeah. So what you're going to find is, particularly as we are doing this sort of shamatha practice where you're developing a calm, clear mind, you will find as that work starts to work, all these great ideas are going to start popping up. That's not the time to follow them. So as we're going to see in the shamatha chart, there's one of the little in the diagram there where there's a monkey in a tree, and the description says, virtuous thoughts in the time of shamatha practice is an obstacle. It's a distraction. So you're going to find this in your practice as you really start to calm the mind. You're going to have all these, particularly if you do a little retreat, if you start doing some retreat, you're going to have all these great ideas, you know, coming up. What you need to do is don't follow them in that meditation. Is just go, okay, that's a great idea. I'll look at that after the meditation. And if you're worried about forgetting it, have a little notepad and just jot down one or two keywords and then drop it and go back to your focusing on the breath. Because otherwise, you're always going to get distracted because you're going to get all sorts of good things coming up in the meditation. So is this your question? Yeah. So... yes, so this is one of the other advantages of shamatha practice. When the mind becomes very calm and clear, your creativity will like explode. But that's not the time to be creative in the middle of the shamatha practice. Use the shamatha practice to be creative after the shamatha practice. Otherwise your shamatha practice is not going to go anywhere and you're going to lose that creativity. So yes, I think this is going to come up later in the Lam Rim text. Okay. And so then just to finish on that point is in your meditation sessions here, we're just learning the practice, and really don't go into these meditations with some sort of expectation of some sort of profound experience or something, because we're just going to get frustrated and it's going to block us, in fact. But you will find that as you go into these practices with a calm, clear mind, different experiences will arise. Sometimes they're very pleasant. Sometimes they're a little bit unpleasant. Sometimes they're a little bit strange. And the meditation texts give the same advice for all of them. Do not get caught up in them. Do not get caught up with craving and attachment to the pleasant ones. Do not get caught up with aversion or fear or worry about the unpleasant ones. Because you're going to have all sorts of physical and mental pleasant, unpleasant, strange experiences coming up. That's part of the process of meditation. And if we get caught up in them with either attachment or aversion, our whole practice will come to a grinding halt. So with all of those experiences, let them go, let them go, let them go, let them go, and come back to whatever you're supposed to be meditating on. And then the practice will go a lot better. Okay? So that's the last piece I'd like to say. As Heidi mentioned earlier, this retreat is going to be in sort of silence mode. And I think that it really is going to be very helpful maintaining that silence to get the most out of this retreat. And actually, it's very rare in our modern society to get an opportunity to be quiet for 8 or 9 days. I mean, even to be one day quiet is like nearly impossible to find. Of course, we're not 100% silence because in my classes, there's opportunity for question-answer. In discussion group each afternoon from 2 till 3, you'll be discussing things amongst yourself. And, of course, if you really have some urgent logistical thing, then you can see the staff if there's some problem in the room or something. But other than that, if we really can maintain that silence, I think you'll find you'll get much more out of this retreat, because if we start talking, our energy goes outward. Our mind becomes scattered, whereas if we really stay quiet and still, then we can really absorb a lot of this material much better and we'll get much more out of this retreat. And like I said, it's very rare in our modern society to get this opportunity, so let's not waste it. We've got plenty of time later to blah, 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 blah when we have to go back to work and so forth. So now is a good time to have this sort of quiet time, I think. And I think... my experience is running these sorts of programs in Tushita. One of the comments I often get at the end of the retreat is many people, how they really appreciated that quiet space that really was very helpful. So I encourage you to do that. Thank you. So let's leave it there. And then tomorrow morning, We'll come back 7:15 and we'll start on sort of working on this full body approach to the shamatha practice and really working on the relaxation tomorrow morning. So we like to start the day in a very nice, relaxed way. Okay? So let's leave it there. So have a nice evening and see you tomorrow morning.